It's time now for our ongoing series discussing substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium.
I am Selena Meekum. I'm with Willow Pit Behavioral Health. I'm the interim CEO as well as the SUD program manager.
My name's Troy Acord. I am with Willow Pit as well. I am a SUD counselor as well as a DV perpetrator treatment provider.
I'm Natalie Holtman, and I'm also with Willow Pit Behavioral Health, and I am a substance use disorder and mental health peer support specialist.
Peer support.
Peer support.
Meaning what?
Meaning that I have walked the road and have experienced everything you could possibly experience and made it to the other side. And so I feel like I'm the example of being able to conquer, handle my disease and move forward in a positive way and change lives because I've been there.
And you're one of the people who, I mean, from personal experience, you know what's going on, and so you can help people out having been there, if you will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I work with people incarcerated. I work on outreach with my team here. I love working in the community and being out there and having a story and be able to sit there and listen to others' stories.
Fantastic. Okay. First person language. First, what do you mean? First person, I mean, they, them, me, we, what are we talking about here? You mean, I'm talking to someone, and I don't call them a they or a them, or I call them a we, or, huh?
Yeah.
Huh? So,
Language really matters.
It does.
I don't think people really understand the power of the things that they say, especially when they're hidden behind a computer somewhere and they don't have to face what it does to the person on the other end.
The little messages that you just have to sit at that keyboard and no consequences to what happens.
Huh? Yep. And in the substance use world, there's a lot of language that is used to describe people who are struggling with substance use that is very polarizing and isolating for them. And you guys can absolutely chime in at any time because you have great points. But when we refer to them as like a group, like those people, well,
right.
I'm not like these people, that creates a very separate us against them kind of attitude and completely takes away the community of like what we need. And community is one of the most important parts of recovery, and when you take away that community, how are you expecting someone to recover?
It's just like any other prejudices or biases that people perpetuate by saying they and them, making them an isolated group. And it dehumanizes, you know, it takes away the humanity of who the person is as an individual, that they're a son, a brother, a father, and they're just in a bad way at the time because of their addiction.
The they and them, it is an important thing to not talk about them that way,
mm-hmm.
as thems.
Mm-hmm.
Should they be, I mean, you were talking about community. Go back to the tree thing.
Yes.
Trees have communities.
Yes, they're very social.
We found that out.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't find a tree treating another tree this way, would you?
No, actually, to go just quickly into that metaphor again, because it's true. Sometimes when the older trees are cut down, if it's a mother tree and there's just a stump left, they've found stumps that are like hundreds and hundreds of years old that are still living because the trees around them are still supporting and sending them nutrients below the surface in their fungi network. And so even when that tree has like been chopped down to its bare minimum, the community around is still supporting it and keeping it going. And the same thing in our lives, like when you get so lost in substance use for whatever your reason may be, oftentimes it's because of pain. And I think people really forget that a lot of the time when you get lost, you're just in pain. Mm-hmm. And we separate them and we treat them as if they are nothing, and we forget that community. We forget to like feed them and support them and nurture them because we don't want to be associated with that. In some of the we had talked about the other day, we've taken over the needle exchange for Grays Harbor. And some of the feedback that we've gotten from different people in the community, some of it has just been beautiful, and I loved it. And there have been people who are like, whatever it takes, whatever we can do to help, that's amazing. Yes, let's get on that pony. And then there's other people who... there was one in particular, and it was in all caps, who it was basically, we don't want these junkies in our neighborhood.
These
and these junkies. And junkies is an outdated term.
I didn't realize that. It's an outdated term?
Yeah, people still use it, but I feel that in society today, we have progressed far enough to understand that that's not necessary language, and that's not language that actually fixes and includes someone and is part of, like, a solution. It actually further exacerbates the problem, because then that's how people identify. You should never identify as, like, your issue, because you are a whole being. Like, I am Selena. I'm a thousand different pieces of things. Like, I'm a sister. I'm a daughter. Like, I'm a friend. And when someone is called, like, a junkie, or they're separated out from the rest of them, the only thing they're identifying as is a junkie. They don't see potential for themselves in any other way. You know, society gets mad because they stay as a quote-unquote junkie. They stay in this terrible place, stuck in their use, because no one's ever told them that they could be different. No one's ever supported them in being different. All they support is that story that person is telling themselves, that they are a junkie. And within the word junkie is the word junk. So I am a piece of junk. Like, can you imagine pulling out of anything when all people are telling you is, like, you're a piece of junk, man. Like, ew, get out of the way, get a job, I don't want you. How can anybody rise when they're being told
that? I have
that?
Yet to have a client that doesn't have some significant trauma in their background. Mm-hmm. I mean, they come to us broken and just wanting to find a life again. And for a lot of addicts, when they are coming out of that, especially when they've been in active addiction for a really long time, it's hard to know who you're going to be outside of those years, you know, wandering around in the dark. People get stuck in that lifestyle because even though it's negative and they know that nothing good comes of it, you get comfortable in the safety of knowing what to expect. You know that there's nothing but garbage coming at you and people looking down on you, but you get in that life so long, when you try to come back out of it, it's like, who am I going to be? How am I going to talk to people? Everybody thinks I'm a piece of garbage anyway. With friends and family, they don't want to start doing good because they think that they'll mess it up anyway. So if I'm doing bad, I'm not disappointing anybody because they already expect me to be in that situation. But if I start doing good and then I fail, I'm actually going to, you know, hurt them even more. So when society doesn't, you know, want you to come back, it's hard for the individual to feel comfortable or confident to come back.
Let me relate that to many rock stars that I've seen interviews with and that I've talked to. They had substance abuse problems, mm-hmm. got themselves clean and sober, and the next thing you know, they are afraid to death to go on stage because they have never been on stage clean mm-hmm. and sober before. Mm-hmm. They don't know how the crowd will react to them. They don't know how they are going to react out there. Mm-hmm. And that's a fear that they have after becoming clean and sober. Mm-hmm. Something to the same effect, really, all the way across the board? I mean, it doesn't have to be a rock star or anything.
I was in active addiction for 20 years. Coming out of that, I was absolutely terrified. I mean, I spent the first 2 years of my recovery continuously on my sponsor's couch and often in tears because I'm like, who am I supposed to be? You know, when I was in active addiction, people wanted to be around me because of what I had. And I was thought so little of myself at that point that I was okay with that. Whatever reason that I could have people like me was okay. And so when I came out and got clean, I was like, why would anybody even hang out with me? Because I don't have that to offer now. And how am I supposed to communicate? And what am I supposed to be because my source of income was all, you know, illegal activity. Mm-hmm. And so now what am I supposed to be? And who am I supposed to talk to? And, you know, my stories are not ones that I share with the general public because they would look at me, you know, like I was a crazy person.
You're one of those people.
You're one of those people.
Exactly.
You're one of those people. And you probably heard that, too.
I did hear that, and I still hear it. And I just want to say, when Willapa started doing the outreach, and we're going out there, and we're out here in Aberdeen and Hoquiam, and we're reaching out to people all over, it is amazing to me that they are broken, but they are some of the kindest people that I have come across, and they want the help, and they just don't know where to go to get it. And if you're being called one of those people, are you really going to go ask when you already don't feel good about yourself because you're using drugs or drinking and messing up? No.
Well, and they don't have anything, and they're ready to give to each other.
Yes.
And somebody doesn't have something, they'll take it off the shirt off their back to help
absolutely
them, even though they've been treated so badly themselves.
I think that's like Selena, like community, and Troy said that community is huge. It takes a village to raise, you know, your children, but it takes a village and it takes community to take care of our own. You know, we're all in this together. If you really think about it, we all have to walk this planet. We all have to have the thoughts. We all have to participate. So let's do it with kindness instead of like,
okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate. Well, you kind of people, I mean, you don't really matter on the planet anyway, do you?
Oh, my goodness, Reese.
I said I was playing devil's advocate.
I know, and you did it so well.
Actual devil.
That is so...
I have never said that in my life.
No, I know. No, you did such a good job with that, because that is truly the way that people think. They don't recognize the value of the soul that's in front of them, and it is so sad. Like Troy, he's just said that he spent 20 years in addiction, and if you have the privilege of hearing some of his stories where it's like he's really experienced some hard times, and to know him in that time, if you would have known him in that time and been able to fast forward and see the amazing person he is now, like, he is one of the biggest advocates for anybody who needs help. Like, he's the first person to give you a hug and give you comfort. He's the first person to step up and offer protection or help or guidance. Whatever you need, he'll show up for you. And he was one of those people that people thought was not worth the time, that was a terrible person, that we'd be better off without. And had people not been there to try to help support him along the way and given him tools that he needed, like, we would have missed out on like one of the finest people. And it's a shame that people don't look at people and understand their potential, because people are capable of so much more than being homeless and being addicted to drugs. And I know that homelessness is a problem here, and I dare say that substance use oftentimes will go hand in hand with that. This is not a life that people
would choose
for themselves. They're not 5 years old and thinking like, when I grow up, I am going to have my own shopping cart on First Street, and I'm going to sleep in the doorway.
Yeah. Sounds just awesome, right?
They end up there, and they stay there because everybody looks at them as if they're someone else's problem.
Yes.
Everybody looks at them as if they are kind of like an object or a thing or just an issue. They don't look at the human being that needs help, because people are scared of the investment of time it's going to take. Like, well, I don't want to give my stuff to have them get better. Like, I just want them to get better. Can't somebody fix this? And it's like, all of us have to be part of that solution. It takes a community, not just one person or five people who have a passion. It needs to be a community effort, because if we had a stronger community, I dare say, like, homelessness would not be as big of an issue in the world as it is today. Like, the difference between homelessness and not homelessness is, like, someone who has a friend who will let you sleep on their couch, who will help you through the hard times.
And it's ridiculous to think that people are going to just magically get out of that situation. When you think about most jobs today, you have to apply online. You have to have a phone number that they can contact you and call you back. You have to be able to have transportation to get back and forth to that location. And if you're homeless, you don't necessarily have any access to, you know, internet and whatnot to apply. And then you apply and they ask you, well, where do you live? And you're under the bridge is not the answer that they want to hear. Now they can't get employment. Now they can't get housing. And it even further presses them into, well, it's, you know, why even try? The cards are stacked against me. I don't have that chance to actually get back up. So, you know, I am so stuck and locked into this position and this state of living that, you know, I might as well be high so I don't have to think about how much I hate my situation.
And that's the bottom line there, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to think about this. I haven't got a job. I haven't got a house. I haven't got any money. Mm-hmm. I think I'll go get high.
I'll go get high, right? You don't have to feel about it. You don't have to think about it. And you're in pain, and the pain goes away for a very short time, and it always comes back waiting for you.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why we need the community.
Exactly. When the community isn't ready to support that, they're like, well, we don't want those drug addicts in our neighborhood. But you're going to just try and even further isolate them where they're not going to get better, and it's only going to perpetuate and end up with more people that are on the streets and addicted instead of actually reaching out and being a part of the solution instead of part of the problem.
And one of these is a mindset that the community has to have of getting away from saying, Those people.
Yeah.
And look at them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it should be more inclusive.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If we were to look at kind of like a little rubric or something that sort of had what people say and what the better choice of language would be, for instance, that person's an addict. You would say instead that person struggles with substance use disorder. And so trying to not identify the person as their issue, but more someone who has this issue. It's the same thing with mental health. It's not so you're schizophrenic. It's someone who is a person who has schizophrenia. And so taking out that identification of, like, they are an addict, they are a junkie. It's a person who has substance use disorder, a person who is struggling with this. This is a person in recovery. And so there's better word choices that you can use, because the word choices that a lot of people use now have just this long history of damage and trauma and branding that goes along with them. And so when you talk about someone, you're like, well, they're an addict. I mean, everybody's mind immediately makes a choice of, like, how you're going to treat that person, what you're going to do with them. And it's all just because of that one word. And so it's important to use that person's name. It's important to treat them as a human.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that just semantics? I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate
again.
You're
doing so good.
I mean, it's just semantics. So
you're doing a good job.
So what if I call them an addict or them or those people? Or, well, why should it make any difference?
Why should we not call people white trash or, you know, any other derogatory
term of a poor
person?
Being politically correct, then.
There's a certain... Yes, there's a line. There's a balance with everything, and it's important to not swing so far in one direction, because it can be just as harmful as being on the other side. And so finding that balance. So yes, political correctness has a place when it's in balance. I'm not suggesting that you have to, like, use a certain language, and if you don't, then you're terrible, because then we're just kind of causing a new problem,
fixing
the old problem. But just being considerate and being kind. Like, I think about all the social issues we have right now, and when it all boils down to it, it's like, if we could just be kind, and if we could look at people when we talk to them, look them in the eye, use their name, humanize them, instead of sitting behind a keyboard, calling them addicts, calling them junkies, saying that they're trash. I mean, when you do that, like Troy said, it dehumanizes them, and it makes it a heck of a lot easier to discard them and to sit there and fight against any sort of program or anything that might help them, when all they need, they're just a person who needs to be, like, helped and loved. We all want help. We all want love.
There's actually a physical reaction in the body. Like, when I'm out and I introduce myself and I do ask their name and I use their name, and I can see a physical reaction in their body and in their face and in their eyes that somebody said their name, and it was so important in that moment. Mm-hmm. And not only did they feel good, I connected with them. your name is important. You have a name, you have a story, you have a journey.
Now, let's talk about your personal experience. You came out at the beginning and said that you've been down this road.
I've been down this road.
Were you a subject of people doing those kind of things, coming out of the, you junkie, you, get out of here, or that kind of stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did. I did. yes, I did. I also, I mean, you kind of do this little balance in your head, too. Like, oh, I'm still holding down my job. I'm taking care of all of my kids. My marriage's sort of intact. So I'm not like those people. I'm not that bad like them.
Ah.
So as long as I was high functioning, then I didn't have a problem.
Yeah, you could function on your stuff. So you weren't out pushing the shopping cart or anything.
Mm-hmm. No, but I can let you know, lying to myself every day.
Mm-hmm.
And looking in the mirror and knowing that I was lying to myself every day and looking at my children and going to work was not a place I wanted to be, and it felt really horrible.
And I know so many addicts that will tell you, and it, my own experience as well, you know, you start doing a drug and you're like, but I'd never do that drug. Well, then you find yourself doing that drug. Well, I would never do that drug this way. Oh, well, I'd never do it that way. And it's just this progressively worse and worse situation.
Slippery slope. It's actually interesting because even within the substance using world, I think there's just sort of a hierarchy or caste system that human beings have to assign just everywhere, I've noticed. But even within the substance using world, people will create that separation where it's like if they just drink alcohol, they will look at people who use meth or opiates as like, oh, I'm not a
lesser.
Junkie.
Yeah.
They're lesser. And so they even have that separation within
Absolutely.
That because they want to be as close to acceptable society as possible. Because if we are acceptable in society, then we are safe. We're safe from people ridiculing us and putting us down. We're allowed privileges that other people are not. Because when you start separating people out and saying like, okay, so yeah, we're not, that's them over there, those people lose privilege and they don't get the privilege of having like finances to pull themselves out. They don't get the privilege of having people be kind to them and share with them and love them. And so even within the substance using community, there is that separation of us versus them. I am not as bad as them because I don't do dope.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it is. That is spot on.
Or if I just smoke it. I don't use.
Yeah, I don't inject.
I don't inject.
Yeah, I don't.
Therefore,
that
makes me better.
Yeah.
And then that's the same thing. Like you can translate it to like, well, I don't use drugs, so that makes me better. Yes, but everybody has their thing, man. Yeah. Everybody has their thing. Everybody has something somewhere that they have done that they are not proud of. Some people get to live it quietly and silently, and they get that privilege. Other people just kind of have to live it out loud, whether they want to or not, because it's hard to hide when you're homeless. And so everybody has their stuff, and I don't think that people realize that. And I think it's sometimes almost more about making sure the finger's pointed away from you, and that's where you get, like, all the different colorful words and the people calling each other, like calling people names and dehumanizing people, so that you're looking at that and you're building a monster for everybody to be mad at and look at together, so that nobody's looking at you and what you've got behind your doors.
If I can direct the attention at you, then nobody's going to look at me to see what my issues are going on. And like I said before, every one of these people is somebody's mother, brother, sister, you know, son and daughter. And if the crazy thing is when the people that put up the biggest noise about being against the recovery community, all of a sudden they have a sister, brother, father, son, daughter that comes that turns up to be an addict, and now their whole world gets flipped upside down. If people would start thinking about, well, what if it was my son, brother, sister, you know, father, daughter? If they would flip it around and start realizing that and thinking about that, and almost at least 90 plus percent of the people that use heroin today started out with a script for an injury of painkillers. and it got progressively worse. They get addicted. Then they can't afford those pills anymore, so they switch to heroin because it was more affordable, and it's just this downhill slide that they can't stop.
Join us next Monday morning at 8:40 a.m. for our continuing discussion on substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium, exclusively on 103.5 FM and 1450 a.m. KBKW. To hear archived discussions, log on to gograysharbor.com.